They had it already. He was just talking about expansion to potentially 100,000 channels. That is a lot. I don't know if I'm going to spend the rest of my life watching TV if I would watch that much. Make sure everything records okay and then you take off the back and make that. Maybe until after Steve leaves. Yeah, no, you're right. It's too late now. Right, yeah. Yeah, you can pause. See? Resume, see? I'm gonna just delete all this anyway, so it doesn't matter. Just make sure I get it. Yeah, but you gotta, here.
Okay, everyone, if you'll please take your seats, we'll get started. Problem. Welcome to the session on organizing locally at the grassroots. I'm Steve Masick from Chicago Media Action. Woo! Everyone had a great day so far. I hope so. It's been an energizing conference. If you've attended a National Media Reform Conference before, you know the focus of these sessions tends to be on national issues, national politics, policy debates and battles taking place inside the Beltway and at the FCC. And in general, it's national organizations like Common Cause, Consumers Union, and Free Press who tend to garner most of the headlines and stories about fights over issues like network neutrality or media ownership, new tract, really the lion's share of foundation funding. And as a result, grassroots organizing and activism taking place in cities and neighborhoods and communities around the country tends to get overshadowed. Yet the work of locally based, locally oriented media reform, justice, and democracy groups like Media Alliance in the Bay Area, Reclaim the Media in Seattle, Chicago Media Action in Chicago, Grand Rapids Institute for Information Democracy in Michigan, fighting for the cause of media accountability, democracy, and socially just communications policy has been instrumental to the successes our movement has enjoyed in recent years. They are the ones who monitor and criticize and protest against the corporate media. They put on educational programs, do public outreach, make connections with other social movements, and train activists to produce their own independent, alternative, nonprofit community media. They organize letter-writing campaigns and write op-eds and produce PSAs. They hold protests. They file comments with the FCC. They turn people out to hearings on media ownership in front of the FCC. They challenge broadcast licenses. And in the process, they add new recruits to the growing army of people demanding a more just media system in this country. The idea behind this session is to provide a forum for representatives of some, and just some, of these local grassroots organizations. We're going to be sharing strategies, tactics, success, and sometimes not so successful stories about their organizing. And it's hoped that out of this session, they'll be able to connect with others around the country engaged in similar sorts of activism. We're really fortunate to have with us today a fantastic panel of speakers who between them have decades worth of experience organizing around these issues. First of all, immediately to my left is Tracy Rosenberg of Media Alliance. Tracy has worked as Media Alliance's administrative director from 1997 to 2002, and she is now the managing director of Media Alliance. She's organized and advocated for a free, accountable, and accessible media system, focusing on the production and sustainability of alternative media outlets from Pacifica Radio to low-power FM and indie media. She's worked on monitoring mainstream media for accuracy and fair representation, and she's facilitated training of numerous nonprofit organizations and citizens groups in effective communications. Immediately to her left is Karen Turing of Reclaim the Media in Seattle. As co-director of Reclaim the Media, Karen works to advance cultural policy and advocacy to support public interest issues in media and communication systems. To her left is Nancy Doyle Brown of the Twin Cities Media Alliance. Nancy has been a media reform activist in Minneapolis for several years. She's helped to organize local conferences on media reform, facilitated workshops, and spoken and written on the topic. And then finally, we have a substitution on the program, and on the program it lists Todd Wolfson as the representative of the Media Mobilizing Project, which is in Philadelphia. Instead, Nishme Zarenko, who was a founding member of the Media Mobilizing Project, will be speaking. So first up, please give a warm welcome to Tracy Rosenberg of Media Alliance.
I hate PowerPoint too, and I'm kind of sorry. In the spirit of community organizing, I'm kind of hoping this is going to be an interactive panel, and we're going to hear from lots of you too, or from you too, because I think that's really at the heart of community organizing. So what I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about my organization, because I have to. Then I'm going to answer the question for us, sort of, why local campaigns? Why are they important? Why do we decide to do them? Why do we put energy into them? I'm going to tell you about a couple of our campaigns briefly, and there's a lot because we've been around for 30 plus years. And then I was kind of hoping to open up a bit of a discussion about sort of how we organize when we do local campaigns. And in order to talk about that, I thought about some of the stuff that I need to remember when I organize. And I called a couple of friends and said, what do you need to remember when you organize? And we all had embarrassing memories of times when we didn't remember those things and things didn't go well. So I'm going to kind of put out a list, a brief list, of things that I think are really important when you're organizing a local campaign. And I'm sure you guys will have lots of things to add, and that's good. So my organization has been around for 30 years in the Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco area. We're a media advocacy and resource organization. We started out as sort of a left-wing journalist association, sort of coming out of Watergate when journalism was going to save the world. Some of you are old enough to remember that. And has really morphed into an organization that wants to show journalism again how to change the world, because they haven't managed it yet. So we really now are an organization of alternative folks, of nonprofit folks, of social justice activists using media. Well, you might spare the PowerPoint after all, and then you'll just have to listen to it. But as I was saying, people using media for social justice goals. And, you know, defining public interest goals not just as fairness, equality, and information, but really as peace, justice, and social responsibility. And that these are the things that media exist to move forward. So, okay, well, PowerPoint won't come back, so. All right, we'll catch up eventually. So one of the things I always say about MA is that we use a holistic approach to media change, and by that I sort of mean that we try just about everything, like the kitchen sink, to see what works. Some of the things that we're doing right now include training media makers, and by that I mean training people who don't think of themselves as media makers to start thinking of themselves that way. We also try to generate authentic first voice media, and what I mean by that is going to folks who will never be media makers and saying, we need your thoughts, we need your experiences, we need your raw, authentic material out there to affect the public agenda. And we're starting to look at sort of alternative media infrastructure, and that means not just outlets in community hands, but it also means how do we keep the technology, which at this point is really how we get our message out, somewhat free from 100% corporate ownership. How do we keep some kind of grassroots control over, you know, the physical mechanics that we use to communicate with each other? So, let's see if this works.
Best argument for using a Mac.
I'll keep talking, and one day the screen will catch up with me. So the question of why local campaigns, I really wanted to think about that since they asked me to come here and talk about local campaigns. And for us, I think there's a bunch of reasons. One is we're a long way from Washington, 3,000 miles, Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco. It's not just a physical distance, which is true, but it's also in many ways a cultural distance. Our local representatives, most of the time, not all the time, are pretty sympathetic to many of the legislative motions that come up. Oftentimes they're sponsoring them, oftentimes they're co-sponsoring them. We can call them again and say, yippee, but it isn't the most energetic organizing platform. We also find that when we're trying to work with the media reform movement's not usual suspects, like maybe younger folks in their 20s, or maybe folks from low-income neighborhoods, that sometimes there's a little bit of rumored, what we would call, alienation from politics. They basically say politics are stupid. We say, call someone and promote AB 332, and they fall asleep immediately. Stress local campaigns is that for us, tangible local goals with specific benefits we find are kind of energizing and bring people in. Policy struggles often go on a really long time. Policy struggles often end up in court in very complicated legal motions. Policy struggles often have hypothetical benefits that take an awfully long time to come around. And the reality, you know, cynical, awful reality, is that people often act in their own self-interest. So sometimes if you say you're going to have X on your corner in 1 year, that works a little better than we're going to go to court and in 7 years the DC Appeals Circuit Court might rule in our favor and then perhaps the FCC will do X. So for us, we kind of feel like local campaigns give us a way to bring new people into a movement so that over time they start to see where the Washington and the Beltway stuff connects with something tangible that's really going on in front of them. So those are sort of the reasons why we think that local campaigns are crucial. You guys might have lots of other reasons. So I said we try everything but the kitchen sink, and I meant that. That's what happens when you've been around for 30 years. So I just wanted to briefly mention a couple of local campaigns we've taken on in the last, say, 10 years. And some have been quite successful, some have been not so successful, some have been kind of middling, a few have been outright failures. I hope that some of these will kind of prick your imagination for stuff that you and your organizations might want to work on, or you may have some really wonderful additions to this sort of list. Cable renegotiations, video franchise agreements, Comcast, in Oakland, in San Francisco. We actually have a little book that we published in 2007 that's about trying to get some benefits out of municipal negotiations, both for new Wi-Fi, as was done very successfully in Minnesota, and also for cable franchise agreements. Licensure renewals. Local stations, broadcast, radio do get relicensed by the FCC. It is possible to listen to them. It is possible, and indeed likely, that you will find ways in which they do not fulfill their public service requirements. You can let the FCC know that they're not. Will their license get renewed? Probably. However, you can contest. FCC hearings, we recently had them in Chicago, in Seattle, in Stanford. There's a strong regional voice at each and every one. The FCC should know that when they go anywhere, that they will be met with a standing room crowd. On a similar model, we organized both in 2000 and in 2004. So when the National Association of Broadcasters decided they would come to the Bay Area, that there were people there to say hi to them and appreciate what they were up to. Advocating for local media workers during labor actions, union busting, some examples, Pacifica from 1999 until forever, and the Bigger Bang in East Bay in 2006, 2007. The local Bay Area Indie Media started up in our office in 1999 as part of the National Association of Broadcaster Organizing at that time, and it's been sustained in ongoing fiscal sponsorship ever since. now we're up to that list of things that I try to remember when I'm organizing, and my friends try to remember when they're organizing, and we often forget. We need to hurry up through this. It's so weird when we put these presentations together, they feel so short. When we get up on stage and do them, they always go on longer than you think. So quickly, and this is a really short list, but a couple of them, when I look at them, I remember when I didn't do them. And a couple of them, when my friends look at them, they say, I'm never going to forget this again. So I hope they kind of bring things up that will help us to discuss local organizing. So first and obvious thing, you have to learn what the community members' concerns are and find out what they identify as a problem with the media, not what you identify as the problem with the media. It's not always the same. I said this before, so I'll say it again. I think that we're one slide ahead. People aren't motivated by their self-interest. Two important questions. What is in it for the people who are participating if they win? What specifically is in it for them? And another interesting question is, what's in it for the opponents, the enemy, if they give us what we want? Is there a scenario where, if we wear them down, we can point to a benefit if they give in? Is there a negotiating tactic? Is there a tool for it? And, you know, and the idealistic part of it is often, because we're so alienated on so many levels, our sort of concept of self-interest is shrunk down to this very tiny place in which we think we can have an impact, and that may not be very broad at all. And community organizing is about teaching people through experience that they can be effective in a larger and larger sphere. So you go from your block to your neighborhood to your city, maybe to your state, maybe to your country, maybe internationally. And in the process, the sense of who myself is and what my self-interest is becomes larger. The obvious thing, people hate meetings. Nobody comes to meetings unless they have a really good reason to come to a meeting. Primary reasons to come to meetings. You know someone and they ask you to come, and so you show up. Or you really want to know more about something. And in my experience, it's reason one at least twice as often as reason two. Ideally, and we're probably not going to achieve that today, but no one should leave a meeting without having introduced themselves. No one should leave a meeting without having had the opportunity to say why they are there. If so, you're not organizing with them. You're performing for them. They're the audience. And if they're going to move beyond coming, seeing what you have to display, and leaving, it's going to involve two-way interaction. And I'm the organizer. I'm not the leader. Anyone and everyone in the room is a leader. Anyone and everyone will have to be, sooner or later, if we're ever going to win anything. I'm facilitating other people in their potential to become a leader in this thing that they care about, period. Which means I should stop talking in general, so I'm going to stop doing that now. And just say one last thing, which is a target. There should be a person, an entity, a specific thing that could solve your problem, if they choose to. Now, they don't choose to, of course, that's why you've got a problem. But potentially there should be some sort of action that actually someone could take to fix the problem. And there are a lot of problems that are really complicated that probably one entity can't prepare. But when you're dealing with a local organizing campaign, it's really wonderful to have a specific target. Because then it's all about, how do I pressure this target? And that's a question that can be answered. And maybe, if we're lucky, it's something that possibly could be done. So I'm going to kind of stop there and pass it on to Karen. And thank you very much.
Touring from reclaim the media. Hell no, I can't. You know, I have this one little computer over here. It's been
in my 30 years, you know, so I have to rock what I know, you know. And so speaking of rocking what I know, I want to thank Tracy for taking the 15 minutes that it took me to write my presentation. Right on. So, you know, I work with an organization called Reclaim Media. What you see up there is a little, just some stuff for y'all to look at so you won't be looking at me while I talk to you about my organization. Reclaim Media, how many people, I'm going to stop right here and ask, how many people in this room, like, actually get paid for working for media justice, media reform, media policy, media literacy, media anything? How many people in the room actually get paid to do that? We are so jealous of you. Because for the last 5 years, our organization has done some really amazing things with no pay staff. We are all volunteers because we believe and love this thing that we do. And we all have regular jobs, you know, doing something completely different from our media org. See, I didn't touch that. See? Hands over here. But we all have other day jobs. And so we do the organizing in our free time, which, you know, has posed some pretty interesting challenges. But I think the one thing about our little happy group is that, you know, everybody knows that we're in it for the love. We are not in it for the paycheck. And it really sort of changes, I think, the way a lot of people feel, you know, or it certainly validates, and maybe a better statement. It's like, because, you know, nobody making more money here. So here, you know, we don't have to worry about when we have meetings, people say, well, where's your office? We got offices all over town. Because we meet in coffee shops and restaurants, and, you know, but we meet every 2 weeks, you know, and decide, you know, what the issues are, you know, our agenda for our particular work, and we try and move through that, and we try and do the very best we can. Our organization really sort of started for real in 2002. When the conveners of Reclaim the Media, that's Jonathan Lawson, Susan Gleason, Daniel Hanna, and a few other people who are no longer with the organization, whose names escape me right now, but I do know them, basically got together and did a shadow conference at the end of the week. And what this group of people learned was that we were really good at organizing events. And so, you know, our history is sort of springs out of organizing large and small events that capture the attention of our neighbors and our community. And building upon that, we take these audiences to the next, to the next, to the next thing that we do. So that's kind of the overall structure of how we do our work. We are part of, I should probably look at my notes because it's a running out study, so. So we are, even though we're a small volunteer organization, it doesn't make us, we don't fear that to a large degree, because what we've also learned is how to expand and contract based on our needs. You know, we don't need a whole room full of people like this to have our every weekly meeting, but as we move into larger issues, for example, we may work on our local cable campaign for cable franchising, which is something that everybody can understand. You know, either I'm paying too much for my cable, I can't get cable at my house, I can't get cable all over my house, and we help people sort of understand the media policy that is sort of connected with something that means something to them. And when we, you know, make those little connections, then we can move people up to bigger connections, like FCC hearings and, you know, the Cable Act of 1996 and all of the rules that the FCC is trying to get public input on. But it really starts with basically, you know, first of all, understanding who you are as an organization and how you want to work, and then understanding the people who you want to engage and bring in to your work, understanding who they are, understanding what they need, and attaching that to this much higher, much more complex like media policy stuff. And we do that in a lot of different ways. We throw our fair share of parties, you know, so because as you said, people will not come to meetings, they'll come to a party, right? People will not come to meetings, but they'll come to a film screening. People won't come to meetings, but they'll come to a play date with mothers. So, you know, I think one of our best tricks is getting people to organizing meetings that they don't know are organizing meetings. The other thing that we do is make sure that each event that we do, we capture names, because we're going to be talking to those people over the long haul and doing that sort of day-to-day, base-level kind of education around media policy, media literacy, and community media, so that when we get to those big fights, we've already got a core of people that really sort of get what we're doing. You know, so that we can take that core of people into the larger organizing piece. So in 2002, we did our first FCC hearing in partnership with the Schenier Center, the UW Law School, and Radio X. So we put organizations together that wouldn't necessarily normally come together. And in doing that, we just sort of acted as a facilitator or an aggregator. We had about 200 people at that meeting. Subsequent FCC hearing, Parents for Our Organization had doubled, tripled, and grown exponentially because of those simple little things. Get people to understand what you're doing, keep talking to them, and then when the big stuff happens, a big portion of the people that you're trying to reach already know what you're talking about, so they can step up to the mic and be articulate. The other thing that we do is try and, you know, understand what we don't know and work with people who do know these things and bring them into the conversation. So our expertise is not necessarily environmental mental justice, but we will go to meetings of organizations who work in environmental justice and talk about our thing. And in doing that, engage them in our thing and work with them on their thing. Media is not their first issue, but we'll help them make it their second issue. So it's a fair trade of information and organizing. We try and work with groups that already have some capacity, you know, because it just makes sense. Does that make sense? To work with people who already have memberships. How many people in the room can, like, put up some sort of example of an activity that they did that they didn't think would be successful at once? Mm-hmm. Oh, look at their hands already, right on. And how did you do that? So it's not really high tech, is it? You know, in the end, you know, no matter how much technology you have, and there are some really amazing tools out there, and we use those tools. You know, we do have a listserv, we do use the internet, we have a deep website, but in the end, it's about me talking to you, and helping you understand my thing, understanding your thing, and then we come along with it. And, you know, there are all kinds of iterations of how that happens, and new words and definitions, you know, whether it's social marketing, social this, social that. But in the end, it just ends up being people talking to people, understanding their stories, and engaging them in your story. It just really doesn't get any more simple than that. And I'm sure, you know, with the Q&A, we'll talk a little bit more about that, and I can certainly give you more detail about exactly how we do our thing and how we do that.
much, Karen. Next up, we need to go around from the Twin Cities Media Alliance.
My name is Nancy Brown, and I am currently working with the Twin Cities Media Alliance. There's some other people from the Twin Cities in here, many of your efforts in here. So I would just encourage you to pipe up anytime you have something to add. I have just recently started working with the Twin Cities Media Alliance, and it is a group of people, primarily journalists, that got together around the time of our FCC hearings in December of 2004 to talk about solutions to the media problem. And they actually decided to put together a community newswire and syndication service that helps raise up the profile and visibility of ethnic and community press in the Twin Cities. So it's all kind of consolidated on one website. It's supported by foundation grants and donations. And I have just come on board with them recently. I have been just working for several years now as a volunteer media reform activist, and in just a variety of different activities and projects that we've done in the Twin Cities. I would say that I'll give you a little bit of the history of what we've been doing. I was a little hesitant to participate in this panel, frankly, because I don't feel like we've had a lot of successes when it comes to policy reform issues, but I feel like I've learned a lot of lessons. In fact, I have 23 lessons learned, if you would like, that I brought 50 copies of. I also have a sheet that tells you how to organize a media fair that I used for organizing media fair that we worked on. I just was talking on the phone the other day to somebody who said a challenge of a lot of grassroots organizations is just literally putting an event together. And that's something that I've done a lot of. So I have copies of that too, and can email it to anybody who would find that helpful. So we have had kind of an evolving and ebbing and waning media reform, series of media reform efforts that are based in the Twin Cities. I would say some of our successes include are in the realm of media literacy, education, empowerment, whatever you want to call that, inviting people to learn more about the context of the corporate media system, where independent media plays a role, how we need to change the media system, what people can do. That's I think, really, I've been impressed with the response that we've got from those kinds of activities. I continue to do workshops, and we have people do a workshop with like 20 people, and there are people who are dissatisfied with the media, but really can't put their finger on why even sometimes, and don't really have an understanding of the context and of the fact that this is a system we can change. It's a system that was created, and not really with our help or input, but that since we still live in a democracy of few, that it's a system that can be transformed. So I have found it very helpful to do workshops. We've done all forms of media literacy, media education, and that's just a matter of getting people together and talking to them about the media system and how it affects them. And I find at the end of those people are just really energized and ready to sign up for anything you've got going on. They're really, once they hear kind of an analysis of what's happening, it makes sense. And I think that's a really important thing to do at this point because it's a something we can't go back from. Once you learn about exactly what the problem is and how it works, you kind of see media differently from that point on. And I think that's an important piece for us to work on at this point. So I was speaking about our successes. I think some of the education pieces have been really successful in the Twin Cities. We have also helped mobilize turnout for the FCC hearings. Really, the FCC hearings have been helpful in getting people more aware that, you know, what is the FCC and what do they do? A couple of 500 people are going to find out about it. And then also we have a number of grassroots media efforts, including the one that I talked about with the Twin Cities Media Alliance. There's also Twin Cities Indie Media, twincities.indiemedia.org, and other indie media activities that have been growing over the years. I was going to say something about the funding. As wonderful as those are, I think we need to figure out, and this goes to this structural issue, how we can sustain those issues over the long term, because they're always on a shoestring. They're always in danger of falling off the mark. So, but that goes to some of the work that we have to do. So as I think about some of the work that we've done, and some of the work we'd like to do, I want to talk about some of the things I think we need to change to be more effective at local media reform efforts. The first one is vision. I think we have talked a lot about what's wrong with the media, and I get this question, I'm sure all of you do too. What is the media system we want? What should the media look like? And that's a challenging question, but I think it's a critical question for us to think about and discuss and come up with a way to articulate. It takes some time, and I just think it would be a really valuable exercise. So I think we need an engaging vision that really excites people and helps people see, oh, it could be a different world. We grew up with this media system, so I think a lot of us aren't even aware of really what we're missing, of the number of voices that are shut out of the conversation right now, the number of perspective issues that are shut out. If we envision something totally different, I think it's really energizing for people. So I would focus some time on that, and I would also keep the vision present all the time, because it is hard work, and we're at the beginning really still of a long struggle, and we need to have that end point, I think, to be looking towards. So I think that vision piece is important. Related to that, I would talk about solutions as well. Again, a lot of problems with the media. I think turning those into solutions is important. What kind of local media do you need? How do we involve all these different groups in creating media, in being part of the media? How do we change media policies on our state level? Local level when they affect the media, national level, so that we have a system that we want. So, you know, it's the same stuff we always talk about, but it's really trying to stay disciplined and focused on the solution side of it, and name those solutions. Even if some of them are really far-fetched, I think we need to start by naming them and then see how we can start moving along and progressing from where we are right now. And some of that will be getting expert help. As some people have already mentioned, the world of media policy is confusing and obscure and kind of hard to penetrate. So I think some of it is just getting the help that you need to understand those pieces of it. The third thing I would say is identify campaigns. I think a lot of local work that's done is not coordinated enough, and it's not campaign driven. So that it ultimately feels kind of disempowering when everyone gets depressed and drops out. Because it feels like, how can we succeed? You know, I sent a letter to the FCC and they didn't write back. You know, what am I going to do? am I really powerless to change this? So I think if we focus on a campaign and kind of marshal our resources and all aim towards a specific goal that we feel like, you know, will actually result in some concrete improvement, that would be a really effective way to keep you energized and sustain your movement locally. Kind of what everybody else has said, choose something that energizes people, choose something local that you can have an effect in. And the only way you can find out what energizes people is going out and talking to them and saying, you know, how do you feel about the media? How do you feel like you're not being heard? How do you feel like you want different kinds of information than you're getting? What do you think we can do to make that happen? So those are just some of the questions that we might start with. Lastly, on my what I think we can do differently is I think we do need to take kind of a long view. This is again goes to the piece about not despairing, which is that this is an enormous infrastructure that we're looking at, and it was built over a lot of decades, and it's not going to come out overnight. We're not going to be able to build an alternative overnight. So I think if we think of ourselves as, you know, continuing to move forward, continuing to take steps forward, that's what we should focus on. Because, you know, we want to see the changes, but we have to also be patient and persistent. A couple other thoughts that I have about ways to connect, this is maybe ways to connect to national issues. I was noticing that all of us on this panel, I believe, are involved in a media justice organization called Magnet. We are actually maybe the newest member of Magnet, which is a nationwide network for media justice groups. And it's MAGNET, Media Action Grassroots Network is the full name. And that is a way to connect very grassroots, community-based organizing to a nationwide coalition so that we can kind of come together when there are those big issues that need a lot of people and a broad base of support. We can tap into those, but so we're not focusing on those big issues all the time on a local level and feeling isolated. You know, I know that I have felt isolated. I felt that the work that I've been engaged in to try to do national work is just really difficult when you're trying to work on it all by yourself in your own community. So it's another way to connect with people. I guess the only other thing that I've been thinking about that maybe I'll just mention is I've been thinking about the people, who are the people that we want to engage in the media reform movement. And this is something we've been talking about today. It's something I've been thinking about recently because there is the media reform movement, and then there has been the emerging media justice movement. In some ways, they're aiming at different groups of people. The media justice movement really focuses on mobilizing the people who have been underrepresented in the media system, in the corporate media and otherwise, and empowering people who are disenfranchised by the current system. We have done a lot of either media stuff in the Twin Cities around that. We are just now, with the Twin Cities Media Alliance, going into some work with more expanding our relationships, I would say, with a lot of communities that we have media relationships with, but not organizing relationships with. So that is kind of a new avenue for us, and I think it's a new opportunity for a lot of people who are looking to change the media and have been primarily focusing on a middle class, mainly educated, mainly white audience, which a lot of media reform groups have. It's a way to broaden the base, and it's a way to really, I think, approach a lot of the people for whom the current media system is most harmful and has the most impact on their daily lives. So it's, in a way, the most important changes to make, and I think there are a lot of concrete changes we can make for groups that have been left out of the media system while we see that larger change. So I wanted to mention that, too. I think that's about it. Thanks.
We have to pause for a second while they change the tape before our next speaker. Our next speaker will be Nijme Zarinko from the Media Mobilizing Project.
Some people who work with people, so we have people in the building. Most recently, in the Bellingham Spokane area, we are also collaborating with an organization called the 206 Zulu. And the Zulus are doing some, and in the Spokane area, there's been some violence and activities going around, which has caused a lot of distress in the community. And the Zulus have talked to us a little bit about sort of issues, and they will be doing some organizing in Eastern Washington and stuff.
Yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Nishmi Tirinko, and I'm a founding member of the Media Mobilizing Project. And I also work with an organization in Philadelphia called the Philadelphia Student Union, which is a youth organizing group of public high school students led by young people with adult support that is working to change the public education system. Media Mobilizing Project. We come to this work rooted in an organizing framework. The Media Mobilizing Project was started by organizers, not media makers, per se. Organizers who realized that our work will not be effective if we cannot master the tools to frame our own messages and our own identities, and then we cannot reach our own constituencies. We come as organizers who are developing and mastering the tools of media in order to cohere a social movement. That's the reason why we're doing this work. We recognize that the media system as it exists is forming and framing people's identities and defining the limits of what is possible in our imaginations. And the people who have the same interests and are suffering from the same problems are isolated from each other. In addition, issue-based organizations are isolated from each other and are encouraged to work in isolation. The media system ultimately is not going to change without a social movement. Media reform or media justice cannot occur in a vacuum. If our society is becoming more polarized and our world is becoming more polarized, then we cannot hope to have a more just media without a more just society. There's generally a blackout of the issues of poor people in the mainstream media. And when these issues are reported on, there still remains an inability to connect issues and to understand the root causes of issues. And the Media Mobilizing Project is about 2 years old, and it's really an ongoing, growing, and evolving project. So what I just said is kind of some of our foundational beliefs or ideas or values that we hold. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit more about MMP. And with all the technical difficulties that have been going on up here, as well as with myself, as I'm reading over this and then Microsoft Word unexpectedly quits and it accidentally saves the document as a web page and all kinds of crazy stuff, which always happens to us, so sometimes we joke and say that we're the Media Immobilizing Project. MMP is a local movement that uses media and communications as an organizing tool in Philadelphia and regionally and statewide as well, and specifically work on issues of poverty, worker rights, housing, youth, and education. In each of these areas, we partner with grassroots groups, and we use media to amplify their campaigns. The basis of our analysis is the idea that we have entered a new era of participatory communications, where the technology is rampant. There's technology everywhere, from blogs and podcasts to video cameras and cell phones. But while people have increased access to media making, we live in an increasingly undemocratic society plagued by structural inequalities. This is clearly illustrated by a mass media system which is rapidly consolidating, resulting in fewer communities having access to media, and ultimately making the right to be heard more essential than the right to free speech. The root of this problem is not embodied in the media system alone, but rather in a highly stratified global economic order, which works to fragment communities, hindering the solidarity necessary for strong social and economic justice movements. One of the things that we believe in MMP is that it's incredibly important to know our history and the history of previous movements, as well as previous time periods, to be able to understand what period we're in today. Each period has certain limitations and also opens up certain possibilities. So in terms of our history, we grow out of two separate but convergent movements of organizing around issues of poverty, human rights, and communications. The first stretches back to King's Poor People's Campaign nearly 40 years ago now. But the legacy of that in poor people's organizing in Philadelphia and across the country in a movement to end poverty led by the poor, two critical lessons emerge from this experience. An economic human rights framework is invaluable in building leadership and cohering an otherwise fragmented movement. The future of the movement is dependent on the development of a media production and distribution infrastructure to tell and share the movement's stories and perspectives. The second issue grows out of the indie media movement, which is part of where MMP took shape in Philadelphia in 2005. Philly IMC is one node in a network of global autonomous media centers, known as the Indie Media Network, that has emerged globally since 1999. Indie media has an infrastructure that is there, that is dedicated to producing independent media, however, is often disconnected from the communities that actually most need that voice. These tools need to be brought to the communities most silenced by the current system. So MMP facilitates communication and grassroots media production among local organizations fighting for the interests of poor and working poor people. The three pillars of our new media and communications network organizing model are: one, media production. For example, MMP is training people to make media. We have developed curricula in audio production, video production, basic web and computer skills, investigative journalism, and photography. One example of this is partnering with Juntos, a Mexican community organization, and training immigrants and low-income communities in video production and basic web skills to be able to tell their own stories and organize within their own community. We graduated a class of 20 Spanish-speaking participants recently. MMP works with groups to implement new tactics for the creative use of media in organizing campaigns. This ranges from creating public service announcements for distribution in impacted communities to collaborating on a story or press release. It takes many forms, and one of those forms I want to show a brief clip, if you can, of a video called Hope in Hard Times. And I'm just going to show the first 5 minutes, and then I'll talk about it as an example of that work.
Do we have any more copies? There's a Kinko's on the premises.
Yeah,
alliance, time. Could you point the microphone to the speaker?
Anyway, that was the video. You can imagine that you saw it. last year, MMP and the Pennsylvania Head Start Association completed the video project Hope in Hard Times, which highlights the strengths of Head Start, the struggles parents face to make ends meet, and the importance of parent leadership in Head Start, because you know, that there was a systematic attack being waged on Head Start, specifically the parent policy councils. Head Start is really the largest anti-poverty program that we still have in this country. The video was sent to all members of the US Congress, and Head Start leaders cited the video as a central reason the federal government reauthorized the program. And it's a great video, and the process of making the video, and this is, you know, part of what we're trying to think about and how we're envisioning MMP, is that, you know, by interviewing and getting Head Start families involved in telling their stories, both in Philadelphia and in Somerset, Pennsylvania, and all around, not only were they able to come to common ground around, you know, how their love and devotion to Head Start and the importance that Head Start has played in their lives and their children's lives, but also their common struggles around things like housing and healthcare and jobs that were really common among all of the families, no matter where they were in the state of Pennsylvania. And that's something really important that came out of the process of making that video and is, you know, continuing to expand the organizing of that group. Another example of our media production and media communications organizing is, there's been and is still going on a protracted fight against casinos, the position of casinos in the city of Philadelphia. And one of the neighborhoods where Trump was trying to put a casino, which was in the heart of North Philadelphia, Trump was using all kinds of tactics, media tactics, from essays in public schools that he was sponsoring to other like media, television promotions, to get people in the community behind the idea of a casino. And the group, primarily, it was a coalition of groups that was fighting the casino, wanted to find a way to demystify and debunk the myths that Trump was putting out around this casino. They were having a hard time getting that out. And so what we ended up doing with them was actually helping them produce and think about messaging and framing some interviews with members of the community on the research that they had done about debunking the myth of the jobs and debunking all these other myths. And just putting them on tape, having people talk about them, what the community really needs. And then just distributing, doing a mass distribution of 500 DVDs around that community, which was a very basic way of letting people know what was happening, giving them some more information, and it got a lot more people involved in that fight, and they were successful in keeping that casino out of North Philadelphia, which is great. Another example is video interviews shot during visits to union member homes by Unite Here's organizers who were trained by MMP were used in an educational series for 200 housekeepers working in motels citywide. The series focused on repetitive stress injuries and was part of the Union Sisterhood Rising campaign. The second pillar is media inclusion. That includes one of the biggest parts of that is building our own media infrastructure, which is key. MMP is developing a grassroots media infrastructure to aid in the production and distribution of the communities and movements' voices and stories. So in addition to training people and producing the media that's used in organizing, we have to have a way to distribute that media. And that distribution, those channels, as much as possible, should be part of our own infrastructure, as well as, you know, the other infrastructures. To this end, MMP is one of the founding groups of a community radio station, 88.1 FM, in Philadelphia, which is the only, which will be, and is, just launched, the only community-based radio station on the FM dial, the only non-commercial radio station on the FM dial in Philadelphia, which is huge. you know, and we're in the process of building an interactive website that includes blogging and a newswire, which will be a central space for our partners to organize and share stories. We're also working on issues of digital inclusion. We're in a fight right now to try to build and to continue the commitment of the city of Philadelphia to build a wireless network, which is something that was started and has been abandoned, and we're fighting for the city to keep it going, and for all of the network that we're working with is now on the front lines of that fight because they understand the importance of wireless technology and access for communities. And we've been able to get a lot of our network groups free computers through this process and free wireless. And in terms of policy reform, approaching it from the ground up as opposed to the top down, with support from the Media and Democracy Coalition, MMP is organizing and educating around media policy issues that converge with the needs of our communities. This includes digital inclusion, municipal broadband deployment, net neutrality, and media ownership. While there are many groups advocating around media policy, because our focus is working with poor communities, we bring new constituencies into media reform battles and connect media policy, which at times feels detached, more directly to everyday struggles. This year, we have held public forums on digital inclusion and municipal broadband deployment, lobbied city officials over the future of the wireless network, and organized new constituencies into the fight over media ownership policy. And lastly, and I think one of the most exciting and fun aspects of our work is network building. The central vision for MMP's work is shaped by a community board made up of groups we work with, including leaders from Pennsylvania Head Start Association, Juntos, Philadelphia Student Union, Casino Free Philadelphia, Taxi Workers Alliance of PA, Community Leadership Institute, Unite Here, Hotel Workers Rising Campaign, African American Business and Residents Association. The MMP Community Board has developed into a network not only to strengthen individual fights within the city, but also to assist these fragmented battles in becoming a movement for the city. MMP promotes the coherence of this network through collaborative media projects, strategy sessions, social gatherings, trainings, forums, hearings, and actions. And so one of the things that we're trying to figure out here is a network organizing form, which is a little bit different than solely a campaign organizing form, because we're part of the process of doing this media messaging, identity building, is bringing organizations into relationship and connection with each other, and using media to help create messages that will unite people across a broad spectrum of different issues that are often isolated from each other. And in doing that, finding that many of the groups that we're working with actually have the same targets. When you take their power analysis, you know, you engage in that process and you take it back to kind of who are the players that are behind some of the things. So we found that, for instance, in the Parking Authority in Philadelphia being a target of both youth who are fighting to get the Parking Authority to get money, to get money that they promised in the school district of Philadelphia to give up that money, as well as the taxi workers who are fighting the Parking Authority you know, for their rights. So there's ways that as groups kind of come into connection with each other, they find that there are common targets. And it helps clarify the root causes and to form a common trajectory and to support each other in these organizing campaigns. So this network organizing form doesn't always take the form of just a campaign, but it takes many forms of groups starting to support each other, coming into connection with each other, and seeing each other as having common cause. The last thing I want to say is that movements begin with the telling of untold stories. Thank you.
On organizing at the grassroots here, so if you'll just come up to the microphone, so this entire session is being recorded, and directed at comments and questions. Please keep them down to a minute so we can hear from as many people as possible. Thanks.
Hi, I'm an organizer coming from Olympia, Washington, which is right on Bayou. And I'm a member of a group called Port Militarization Resistance. And we've been organizing over both the last 2 years, and we've found our numbers growing. And where I come from, we have a very strong independent media system going on. There's pirate radio, there's community radio, there's community newspapers, all kinds of things. We found that we have hit a dead wall because of the corporate media portrayal of what our groups do. So for example, the Olympian, the local newspaper, we can't come to problem order if it leads the meetings. So if we don't get beat up by the cops, we mean this is based around gut patch. So if we don't get beat up by the cops, we don't get any coverage. And when we do get beat up by the cops, the headline is protest turned violent. And the same thing is that for Seattle news stations. And so we kind of hit a wall where they created this division and feel just so strong about it. How can a group of organizers organize around media reform when they are sort of the target of that local media? Same question.
So, you know, the first answer is to be the media. And particularly in Olympia, you have a community television station as well. And so don't discount the power and the voice of the community television station. Do your own television show. Remember that thing that happened in Evergreen with the hip-hop artist and the big blowing up and Bolivian and crazy and said violence, violence, violence. So what those kids did was they put together a videotape that actually showed what happened, right? Okay, so camera as witness. Put it up on YouTube. And, you know, I know people are like, well, you know. And so part of some of the work that we do is to get people to understand the power of the media that exists within you and around them and the alternative media. So break your stories to the alternative press. In essence, don't be controlled by what mainstream media says about you because they're just going to do that anyway. Make a friendly enemy. I'm always making enemies out of my friends. But the point being, if the focus of your work, because Reclaiming Media does a lot of work with mainstream media, one of our biggest advocates, particularly with the FCC here, was the Seattle Times, because they have a vested interest in the cross-ownership rule. Just don't be afraid to call a reporter and establish your relationship with them when you're not doing direct action. And, it could have the alternative effect of softening the story.
That's kind of one thing that I was thinking is that reporters in general, they want to do a good job on a story. They have very limited time, and they have a very limited Rolodex. So if you can find a way to meet with them, tell them your story, and say if you ever have a question, if there's ever anything that happens, you can call me. I think a lot of them would be very happy to do that. So I agree absolutely to start relationships.
Hi, my name is Trent Sagan. I'm local media community organizer. One of the successes that we have had, I think, in the cities is framing, is analysis and framing. The use of the term corporate media, which I think is so basic to analysis of why and for me, the thing that came up again and again was saying, well, we can't do that because we'll get beat up in the media. We can't go that far. I'm just really interested by the words that you're using, media reform, media justice. I think in order to overcome a huge corporate media system, we need to go off brand and a lot of minds. And it needs to be inside and outside.
Question. I mean, I certainly think there's two issues. One is the perception or the fear of retaliation. The other is absolutely real retaliation that's absolutely going to happen if you step over the line. And those are not always exactly the same thing. But two thoughts come to mind. One is, I was talking a little bit about having a target, having an achievable goal, structuring a campaign so that there's a tangible outcome and there's a specific target. And sometimes you can modulate those things in a campaign so that you're not asking the folks that are with you to go further than it is reasonable or possible for them to go. It's a lot to ask people, this is so important that you should lose your job over it. And they've got to come to that themselves. So maybe there's a point between the most extreme version of the campaign and a useless version of the campaign that can sort of mesh with as far as the folks that you're working with are able to go at this particular time. And you may find over time that they're willing to go one more step and one more step and one more step closer to the abyss or the drama or whatever you want to call it. But it may take some time to build there. I mean, certainly most movements that have gotten to that point, historically, it took some time to build up to that point where people were willing to put themselves into physical, emotional, financial jeopardy. So I think that would be pretty much my answer. People will do it when they feel like they have as much to lose one way or the other, that basically if they don't get the things that they're reaching for, they don't care if they have a job or not. I mean, that's what takes people to that point. And I think that sort of has to be there in the movement itself. You can't kind of artificially create it.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you, but can you tell me what your campaign is on? I'm just That's part of the reason I don't want to answer the question because I wasn't sure.
Well, I
think
you're saying that I'm volunteer for various organizations. You want to have the knowledge of the demographic question.
It was really difficult to organize the town festival because Middletown is such a small community and people are so vested in the team up being as a source of, you know, some of the money from the local to that community today. And so, you know, it's really hard to get people to please, even though it's going to be about business because it's, you know, impossible to do. Yeah, I mean, I guess my only reaction to that would be, this is the situation that we're dealing with, right? In terms of what, this is how desperate all our lives are. And I also think that, I mean, one example of that from our work is my work with the youth organization, and you know, we've worked with an MMP with Head Start. One of the Head Starts that we work with is linked into the school district, is actually a school district Head Start. So they haven't come out with us and taken stands against the school district. However, we do partner with them on other things. And so partly we need to find a way to meet them where they are and still continue to build power with them even though they won't come with us on certain things.
And also with regard to your campaign, you know, you have to really sort of think how your campaign is organized. I watched the 300 last night in my room because everybody else was out partying. You've seen the 300. I mean, anybody's going to be, well, part of what goes on is, you know, there are people in your, that will be with a part of your campaign that will be willing to throw themselves under the bus. Use those people to do that. You know, and then there'll be other people who are like shop stewards and managers and stuff like that at TMI. They can't do that. So what you have to do is give them things that they can do, just like everybody said, give them things that they can do and be organized around the issue, and when they can step out, they will, but you know, you have to first get that line. So maybe the workers in the plant may not have been the ones to really be the ones to be out there, and you know, I mean, and it happened the same way with the gay rights movement. You know, there were those who were like, we're here, we're queer, get used to it, and they were out there. But in the halls of justice and on Capitol Hill, there were legislative aides that were whispering in the ears of the people who could affect change. And so, you know, part of the, you know, your answer might be the way you structure your campaign and don't ask people to, you know, again, as Tracy said, risk what they feel comfortable risking.
Hi, John Page from Kansas City. With Friends of Community Media, we celebrated our first anniversary as 501c3 this year. And last year we did our first Progressive Media Awards event, and we brought the name of our son in from Alternative Radio and tried to build an audience, and it was a great event. Do you have any suggestions on structuring, particularly when the media that you're criticizing are folks that you want to let, that should help you let people know what's going on? Of course, we have a community radio station, which helped out a lot, but that wasn't enough to really do. You have the events on getting the events well attended.
Okay, well, I think
that
first you can redefine your definition of what is well attended. You know, I mean, that's the first thing you can do is decide, you know, I mean, really, literally, you know, one of the things that we learned with Reclaim the Media is write a press release on it. We break a finger down, we write a press release. I mean, you know, and so, you know, something that may not have been well attended can still get another bounce or seem to be more, you know, you can shape that by the messages that you put out there, but you can also shape that by how you decide about who's in the room and how important they are to the work that you're doing and honor those people. So, you know, as opposed to, and even with your volunteers, you know, establish what your success point is going to be. And if it's not that, then reestablish another point of success because it really is important for volunteers to feel like things are continually moving and that what they're doing is important. So hopefully after the David Marsalian event, you guys will, right on, we whether there were 3 people there or whether there were 300 people there. You see what I'm saying?
Just very quickly, in Chicago Media Action's had a lot of success organizing issue forums. I strongly recommend showing films because it seems like people will turn out for a free movie, even if it's a documentary about you know, corporate propaganda for the Iraq War. If they see a free movie, they see an ad for a free movie, they'll show up. We also partnered with progressive churches, and I tell you, it's more important, I think, to have an announcement about your event in a church bulletin than to have a front, you know, full-page ad in the daily newspaper. Honestly, more people will show up. So that's my advice.
First of all, I just want to say that I'm exceptionally pleased that this is a national conference here in Indianapolis. It creates a... My name is Ralph Crowder. I'm originally from Indianapolis, but stayed pretty much everywhere you can stay in the United States. Currently, like I said, I'm excited about this national conference because it creates a circular dialogue that we can all share stories together and hopefully bring to our cities that we originally from. But I want to get, I know this is a national conference, but I want to speak to a local issue. I've been doing a lot of work this year within the public school system. And to put this into context, Minnesota has the second highest rate of gaps in academic achievement between black and white students. Okay. More specifically, my work has been in and around navigating and understanding and advocating for black children in the Minneapolis public schools dealing with No Child Left Behind Title I issues. And really understanding how much big money is invested in division and keeping groups of people polarized and divided through education, and how that specifically having an impact on our children, families, and community. I guess one thing that I struggle with is using creatively media to engage our families and our community to balance the power structure of the system of public education, which is funded behind major money. So I guess my question is, with that reality, it's almost like a David Goliath kind of thing, and I'm trying to use the pebble and the slingshot the best I can. So being a part of the hip hop generation, there's a thing called mixtapes. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that method of communication, but it's been around. Now it's a mixed CD. So we've been very involved in meetings, site council meetings, school-related meetings, district meetings, really being there as an independent source of media, taping all conversations because they're in the public forum. And so it's not a private school, these are wide for public consumption. So using the medium of independent media to engage parent groups and to also inform communities is something that I see is definitely needed in the struggle for our children's education and the health of our broader communities. And I was just wondering, can you speak to anything specifically creatively that one could utilize as a parent, as a independent media source in the community to continue to challenge and hold our systems accountable for our children's education?
Hi, first of all, thank you. I would like to speak with you after and talk about this issue. I think, can you stay up there so I can talk directly to you? So, I mean, one thing, like, I work with a group of young people in Philadelphia called Philadelphia Student Union, and I kind of pretty much live in the school system. One, I think that if there's a way for you to engage young people in making media, that would be a great place to start. So I don't know if there's an opportunity to do that, but if you can get tools of audio and video into their hands and get them to start documenting what it's like to go to their schools, start getting them, interviewing their parents, their families, their teachers about what's going on in the school system. I'll show you our YouTube page. You know, we have several videos that were made by our young people. That can spread like wildfire throughout, you know, other youth and families. So I think, especially with the use of media, it's very hopeful in terms of young people who are often more media savvy than adults, getting to use these tools and using them to spread their message, doing their research, and, you know, understanding what they want to do and then putting it out there. And something that feels very empowering because it can come out with a finished product. Whereas going up against the school system often does not feel very empowering. So, I think there's a lot to talk about, and I'd like to, you know, connect with you and talk about that more.
We probably have time for maybe like three more comments / questions. So.
Can I make one more comment about that? I was reading recently that that in fascist countries, the schools teach fascism, and in capitalist countries, the schools teach capitalism. I think the school system is no different than any other institution, and it has the exact same, even the corporate infrastructure, it has the same disparities, inequalities, and we need to treat it just like we treat any other institution to try to build power and try to, make demands that it serve us instead of that we serve the institution. So anyway, I'd be interested. I think the Alliance would be interested in working with you too here in the Twin Cities. So I'm glad you're in the work.
Hi, my name is Gail Bonneau. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, but I lived in California for 15 years. The last question was a perfect segue into my this is more of a statement. I wondered if anyone in here has heard of eSpeaks.org. eSpeaks, okay. Great. It's a wonderful grassroots movement for the youth. They conduct workshops and how to write poetry, and the youth get together and they bond with the other youth, and then they do these poetry slams. And I think it's a great way to integrate with the media movement and a way to bring in people and for bonding. Another organization, which is an international organization that I find very helpful, is Toastmasters. And anyone in here familiar with Toastmasters? Right. It's a rigorous agenda, but most people in here just cringe thinking about going to. But it helps improve your speaking abilities and for persuasion. You need to get up in front of people and give a persuasive argument. This is the best practice in order to do that. In the meetings, you actually get coaching from the other people, you get mentoring from people, and I highly recommend it. And so I'm sorry this wasn't a question, it's more of a statement, but I think it's a good tool for people to use. Thank you.
My name is Alka, I'm from Chicago, I'm with the Video Chamba group, and I have a question. Since most of the people who act in the grassroots media are also organizers, so as organizers, we focus on certain stuff, we fight for certain things, and, you know, we are not biased. At the same time, media is supposed to be independent, news is supposed to be unbiased, so I often think about it, where exactly is the line between making media that's open to different opinions, and how do you deal with your own bias, and how do you even portray something without including your own personal feelings in it?
Take a stab at that. It is true that we've got ideas about accuracy, objectivity, propaganda, and spin like wildly conflated over the last 30 years. I don't think anybody knows what they mean when they're talking about those things anymore. But one like theory that I'll put out that's not necessarily right or wrong, it's just an idea about those things, is that whenever you're telling a story, whether you're doing it online or you're doing it in print or you're putting together a radio or television story, or frankly, when you're sitting next to someone and trying to explain them accurately when it's sued, you're making certain choices about which facts to put in and which facts to put out. It may be the fact that a blue duck flew overhead somehow changes the meaning of the story. And you might leave in the blue duck, you might take out the blue duck, the reader, the listener might feel different things as a result of having that left in or not left in. So the reality is that there's always a process of contextualization, there's always a process of how am I telling this story. So when you look at the word objectivity, I think you have to look at, am I consciously and honestly looking at these choices and making them in order to tell the story as accurately as I can? Or am I ignoring them, paying no attention to them, or deceptively making choices in how I tell the story to have a certain effect that I'm not confident to? And maybe that is sort of the line in terms of when we are being journalists in the proper sense of the term, and when we are being propagandists on the other side of the term. Anyway, forward to it.
This is an issue that's near and dear to my heart because I firmly believe there is no such thing as objectivity. And it's one of the most pernicious myths that has defined our current journalistic system. It is taught in journalism schools, and it was invented by people who wanted a market monopoly in communities for their media systems. So they do unbiased, objective. Now they call it balanced because they're kind of feeling worried about the word objective, which means they get two sides. Are there two sides to anything, really? Anyway, I think it's a myth. I think we should stop teaching in journalism school. I think what we need to do instead is identify where we think we're coming from, try to be as transparent with that as we can, and recognize that we're all coming from different places. You can't ask me to be objective any more than you can ask anybody else to be objective. So that gets away from the problems of the corporate media system and into significant, serious flaw in the way we teach and practice journalism that is part of it and needs to be remedied.
I'm a professional musician from Austin, Texas, also an activist. In Austin, we're using music in all of our protests and our activists, we go to a lot of meetings of different groups and offer what we have. Our skills and services include public relations, writing of press releases, all that stuff is what we do for a living. And just saying this to this room, because if you're involved in any kind of grassroots organizing, don't forget your local musicians. If you have successful musicians in your community, they're most likely very progressive. They're also PR professionals, so you need to talk to them about event planning, about press releases, about all that stuff. Involve them, and if you bring them to a protest, it's very hard to spin a protest in a negative way with music involved. And so there are a lot of things. So please remember your professional music community. Ask them to be involved, but don't ask them just to play music and then get lost. Ask them how to organize, because that's what they do for a living. So that's how we make our living.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for coming. We would love to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. Beth.
Thank you.